Centre with All Souls here, and we kind of walk about 5-10 minutes walk that way into what's called Fitzrovia. So right now we sit on the kind of west, on Regent Street, on the west edge of Fitzrovia. You go further west, you're in Marylebone, further south, you're in Soho Mayfair. We're Fitzrovia, which is the other kind of corner around Oxford Street. And it's a bit of a random area in that there's obviously very rich people living in very rich houses. So Guy Ritchie's just bought a house in the local square to us. At the same time, there's obviously people who live in council flats, who are from very poor backgrounds. We work with a lot of kids whose parents don't really speak English because they're immigrants into the country. There's no overwhelming ethnic diversity. It's central London's very just sort of 1,000 different ethnicities. So the largest ethnicity in our area is white other, which obviously isn't very helpful. So it's very diverse in that respect, and lots of different backgrounds. And one of the things the clubhouse is we're a local church. We try and really just reach those people in Fitzrovia, trying to work with them, do lots of stuff with them. We run some youth clubs, which is my job. We do some kids' stuff. We do some other bits and pieces like that. It's all great and good fun. That's the background I'm speaking from. Lots of you from different backgrounds. So we'll work it out. Now, one of these things badged as a workshop, obviously there's 45 minutes and loads of people, so there'll be hopefully some interactivity, but probably more side-to-side interactivity among yourselves than forward and backwards. That said, do heckle and yell stuff out, because otherwise we won't hear. So if you have a question, put your hand up. I might ignore you, but I might not, so we'll go with that and see what happens. Okay. The first thing I want to say is, before we talk about these five brilliant ideas, is that they're probably not that brilliant, okay? Ideas are just ideas. They might be a good way for reaching people with the gospel, they might be a bad way, depending on your context. And more important is the things that underpin that. And that's Jesus and the gospel. So I'm going to talk about that for a bit, and then we'll talk about these five ideas. So everyone grab a Bible, if you've got one, which you should do, and turn to Leviticus 23. It's surprising, isn't it? Okay, so one of the great things about the book of Leviticus, because it is great, is it teaches us about what will happen when Jesus comes by all these festivals and weird things. And there's a festival called the Day of Atonement. So Leviticus 23, you want to go to 26. Okay, and so the Lord is giving these instructions to Moses about these festivals they will celebrate, and one of them is the Day of Atonement. Now, we know the Day of Atonement is pointing forward to when Jesus will die for the sins of his people and rescue them. And this is what it says. So the Lord said to Moses, "The 10th day of the 7th month is the Day of Atonement. Hold a sacred assembly and deny yourselves, and present an offering made to the Lord by fire. Do not work on that day, because it is the Day of Atonement, when atonement is made for you before the Lord your God. Anyone who does not deny himself on that day must be cut off from his people. I will destroy from among his people anyone who does any work on that day. You shall do no work at all. This is to be a lasting ordinance for the generations to come, wherever you live. It is a Sabbath rest of rest for you, and you must deny yourselves. From evening of the 9th day of the month until the following evening, you observe your Sabbath." Now, okay, bit random verse. The point is, it repeatedly says, you must deny yourself. You must not do work. You must not do work. If you do work, you will die. That's what it says. Now, that's important because it's teaching us about Christ. It says when Christ comes and dies, the important thing is it's not our work. On the Day of Atonement, Christ makes atonement for you. If you try and do something for it, then you've missed the point of it completely. If you try and go, I will now do something to help Jesus carry out his work, I will try and add my work to what he's done, then you've missed the point, okay? He does everything for you. If you do something on that day, you will die. It's quite clear. So if you try and add to Jesus' work, to his gospel, to what he's done, that's a bad thing. Now, as evangelical Christians, which I guess most of us are, we're very good at saying, yeah, Jesus brings us to heaven. He saves us. We don't do anything for it. He takes us straight to heaven. But we're quite bad at what happens now here on earth. We're quite bad at kind of going, okay, that means, therefore, I need to work really hard to prove myself, to show that I'm a good person, that I've changed, that I need to kind of do all this stuff. I need to keep trying and working. And actually, that's still not the point. The point is God does it all for you, okay? Jesus on the cross accomplishes your salvation. He saves you, he brings you to him, and he carries out it all, okay? Now, this is important because when we get into doing ministry and working with these people in communities, it's quite a tough work, okay? And it's quite a tough work, and what it can be really easy to do is kind of work really hard at it and go, right, I'm going to put more effort in. I'm going to try really hard. I look at me, I'm doing all this great stuff. And if you achieve success that way, then often the thing is pride. Like, look at me and all this great stuff I have done. Aren't I brilliant? I've tried really hard at this work and I've done all this stuff. And if you fail at it, which, you know, let's face it, we're going to at some point, then what will happen is you will kind of feel devastated. And that's, both those are wrong, because Jesus is there working for us. And the important thing we need to do is to rest in the work he's done. Is to go, yeah, Jesus, you've done it all for me. You're great, you're brilliant, you're awesome. I trust in you. I can rest in your work knowing you've accomplished these things. My worth does not depend on me working really hard for you. I know you've saved me. I know my Father loves me. I know that's happened on the cross. So it means we can rest in that work, and it means that we need to know the value of prayer. So when we go, actually, the most important thing I need to be doing is praying for these people. I need to be praying for them, that God will work in them. I need to be trusting in him, because he does the work. So I need to be a person who will pray lots, because I want to pray lots, because I know Jesus does everything. And I be someone who loves reading my Bible, because it teaches me of this great God who saves me. It gives me the energy. It gives me the enthusiasm to do this kind of stuff. But it also means... it means you can take great risks all of a sudden. Because if everything depends on you and you have to work really hard, then you don't want to take a big risk because it might fail and go horribly wrong. Okay? But if it doesn't depend on you, if it depends on Christ's great working, which it does, then you can take great risks. And you can take, you can just do kind of this stuff and go, you know what, we're going to try it. If it fails, it goes horribly wrong. It doesn't matter. My worth doesn't depend on it succeeding. We're going to push these things. We're going to try them. Okay? So that's the important thing. If you don't keep the gospel central, stuff will start to fall apart. Because reaching out to people, especially people who aren't currently being reached, who aren't really white and middle class, okay, is trying and costly work. Go slide. Oh, no. Right, the slide thing's broken, so let's just pretend it's not there. And so this thing is quite a trying... oh, no, it's appeared. Magic. This is amazing. Oh, thanks. There's someone up there who's fixed it. Okay, it's a real trying and costly work, because it takes a long time. Okay, I've been working where I have for 5 years now, and we've seen some great stuff happen, and a lot of stuff not really happen at all. So one of the boys I've known for 3-4 years, he's very excited because I get to go to court with him the other day. He's not excited because he's become a Christian or anything like that, but we've established a relationship now where I get to go to court with him, which is fun. And it takes a while, and it's costly because... people aren't necessarily very nice and respectful of your own personal time and property. So if you see them in the street, they want to stop and chat, even though you're a very busy person and you have stuff to do. And if they come around your house, they will accidentally break stuff because they just have. And you're like, so it becomes quite stressful and tiring. And yeah, it's just a long, hard process. This is a true story. So about 5-6 weeks ago, we started doing a Bible study in Starbucks. Very exciting. For five boys, right? Who they were known Christian kids. Most of them had heard the gospel. We've told them to it. We've talked about it, and they'd agreed to come to Starbucks with us to read the Bible. Now, part of this is the attraction of going to Starbucks and getting one of those venti frappuccino mocha things, right? Full of cream, and it's delightful. But they still want us to read the Bible, so we do that. We get through Mark 1, 1.5, right? So just that bit of Mark 1. But again, that's something, right? It's exciting. An hour later, 4 of those boys get arrested for a crime which 2 of them definitely committed. They pled guilty, and 2 of them are denying they did. So there we go, and you're just like, my word, it's a struggle. These things happen. Another story, so before I came in, there was a kid who came to all the Black Bible Club, the little kids club stuff. And as he came older, he was really excited about Jesus, was talking about getting baptized. His parents literally moved to Outer Mongolia. So he literally went to Outer Mongolia, and we didn't see him for 4 years. He came back, and he was like, I can't be bothered with this stuff anymore. So it's quite stressful in a sense that you just don't feel stuff's getting done. But that's why you have to have the focus is the gospel. So if you know the gospel is the power of God's salvation, if you know that God is generous and loves you abundantly in Christ, you kind of go, we'll carry on doing this. We'll carry on persevering. We'll stick with it. If you don't know that, if you don't think that God's brilliant and great, then stuff's going to suffer. Now, there's a really lovely verse. Lovely. I'll just read it out to you. It's in Ephesians 3, verse 20. And it says this, now to him who is able to do immeasurably more than all we ask or imagine, according to the power that is work within us. Now we often think God will do maybe some of the stuff that I've hoped for. I want to save this community, but I'm not really sure God does particularly. But it says, I will do immeasurably more than you can ask or imagine. God is much better than we are. And so if we trust and rest in his work, it'll give us the energy and the hope and enthusiasm to carry on doing that stuff. Okay. Ideas about reaching out with people. Oh, sorry, slide thing's still not working. Great. When we think about ideas, think about it like this. Do these things, give us the chance to share our lives and sow the gospel with these people, okay? When you think of an idea, think that. So we often think of it in terms of, can we just tell them about Jesus? But I think it's best to think of it, can we share our lives with them and so tell them about Jesus? We've got to kind of get the balance right. Now, there's a helpful graph, hopefully helpful, to show you this. So, this graph here, you might not be able to read it, but there's two axes, okay? On the x-axis, that's the horizontal one, it says your life, and on the y-axis, that's the vertical one, it says proclamation, okay? Now, we think about these things, and so you can you think like street preaching will be high up on the proclamation, but low on the life sharing. You go outside there on the corner, you start telling people about Jesus, and you get an Asbo like the guy did at Oxford Circus, but that's the street preaching kind of stuff. And then there's, I'm just going to say, it's lazy hanging about. So if you just hang out with your friends, you're playing Xbox on the sofa or whatever, then you're sharing your life, but you might not be sharing anything about Jesus. And obviously the ideal is in the top right corner there. So that's the ideal. You're sharing your life with them and so about Jesus. Now, when we often start doing youth work, certainly, we think we'll share lots of our life with them, and then eventually we'll bring it around to Jesus. We'll kind of curve it up at the end. So we'll say, we'll run a youth club, we'll get some kids to come down, we'll hang out with them a lot. After a bit, they'll go, why are you doing this? And we'll go, ah, it's because Jesus loves me. And then we're in, okay? And it kind of, it turns up like this. But probably, in practice, and if you've done youth clubs, you'll probably know this, doesn't really work that well. There is a slight uptick, but if you start just kind of going, we'll keep the Jesus thing on the side, we'll not share about Jesus just yet, and then try and bring it up, then it doesn't really work because you're kind of being dishonest. You're like, hang out with us, you know, we'll be friends, we'll be cool, and then actually we've got an ulterior motive to tell you about Jesus. That's not very honest, and at the same time, it doesn't often work because it's a lot of effort then to change the dynamic because they're like, hang on a second, I thought we were just hanging out and just doing whatever I wanted to do, and now you want to talk to me about Jesus, do a Bible study? That's a bit weird. So it's better just to kind of start with the proclamation, or like at least lead with it honestly, and then in that share your life with them. So to go up front, really honestly, go, yeah, I love Jesus, and I want to talk to you, do this stuff with you, to tell you about him. Let's hang out together. Let's do some stuff together. Because then the conversation's about Jesus, and if people aren't interested, you kind of know that up front. So what you want to be doing is you're sharing your life with people so that you can tell about Jesus. And I'm not saying, therefore, that, oh, just doing events so you don't get to share your life is wrong. But in a sense, we're Christians. We love Jesus, okay? He's brilliant. He should be our all. And we kind of are the outreach event, okay? You as a person are an outreach event. You meet people, you chat to them, and you can share Jesus with them. It doesn't mean that you don't say anything. You just kind of expect them to kind of osmosis Christianity. Like if you just stand there and be a good Christian, they'll somehow pick up Christ from you, like you just pass it along. But you, as a person, can share Jesus with them. It's very exciting, okay? All that preamble done, we're going to do some five ideas now. Okay, everyone ready for this? Like I said, they're probably not that great idea, but we'll have other ones and we can work on them. Okay, first idea, throw a party. Everyone loves parties, right? Parties are cool. You have any reason to have a celebration, just throw a party, okay? And you can invite people along, and people will turn up. You can invite your next-door neighbors. You can invite the family you know from the school or whatever, and you can chat to them. Now, again, right, intentionality. You're saying in this, we're having a party because we want to meet people. Parties are great. Celebrations are great. But we want to tell people about Jesus. So, you know, you invite people around, you invite people from your church, you pray about it, you actually open up your door, say, come in, and you go, oh, this is my friend from church, this is what I believe, this kind of stuff. You go in intentionality. It seems slightly scary, but at least you're being honest with people, and it's a party. Everyone loves them. Okay, right. Everyone turn to the person next to you and talk to them and say, what would it be like to hold a party where your intention is kind of just talk to people about Jesus? Now, I'm saying at this point, you don't have a God slot. If that's appropriate, do it. But God slots always feel slightly awkward if you kind of tag them at the end without thinking about it. So just turn to the person next to you, talk to them about this, have a party. What would it be like? Go from there. People look puzzled. Talk. It's good. Okay, just bring that to a close. Okay, idea number two, right? Run an after-school club. Now, hands up who already runs after-school clubs. People here? That's okay, all right. After-school clubs are great fun because you can get kids to come down and they do stuff with you, and it's entertaining. So we do this thing at Clubhouse with the kids from the school. So local primary school, to C of E school, we hang out with them, they like us a bit, we do some stuff. But one of the things we do is after school on a Monday and a Wednesday, we take some of the kids back to the community centre and we do something called Bible Club. Now, the reason it's called Bible Club is so it's saying what actually it is. In it, we teach people about the Bible. There's also a football club and a dance club. I'll let you guess what happens in those ones, right? But Bible Club, they just teach these kids the Bible, and it's great because you have kids who are willing to come. Because you're advertising it as Bible Club, and because on the consent forms and because when you chat to parents, you're saying this is what it is. It's a Bible Club. We teach them about Jesus. Then the kids can come along and learn about Jesus. And you're not doing the slightly deceitful thing, which sometimes we've been known to do, where you kind of say, come along to an after-school club, and we're telling your kids about Jesus. And they go home and say, we learn about Jesus. And the parents come to you and go, what? I thought they were coming to an after-school party, not a club. So we've called it Bible Club for that reason. Obviously, you don't have to call it that, but you can call it whatever you want. As long as you're being clear, this is what we're doing. Now, there's a difference between running an after-school club where you kind of take them along and you intentionally do stuff with them. So you go, we'll do some activities, we'll do talks, we'll do small groups, whatever that is, and just running what's called a drop-in, open drop-in centre. And so a drop-in centre would be when you kind of fling the doors wide open and say, please come in and hang out with us. That doesn't really often... It depends how you do it, but often it's guilty of not having a purpose. So you bring people in, and you think, what we'll do is we'll just throw a God slot in at the end of it all. And so we've got you in on the basis of being really hyped up about playing pool or Xbox or table tennis, whatever it is your kids love. And at the end of it, we said, right, stop the fun you're having. Now you have to bear with this talk for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, so that you may continue to have this fun. Now, obviously, that's a stereotype, and that's when it's done badly. But we've probably all done stuff like that occasionally. And one of the things that feels uncomfortable about that is what you're saying is you need to obey and you need to listen and be a good person before you can hear the gospel. If you can obey and listen and be a good person, then you get to hear the gospel. If you haven't obeyed and been a good person, then we'll throw you out because you're disrupting the session. Now, obviously, there's right things to throw kids out, but it can often feel like you reward the good ones talking about Jesus, and that's not really the gospel at that point. Now, last week we shut all our youth clubs because some of the boys are being really unruly and violent and so forth. Pool balls and walls, stuff like that. Okay, close them all. Today, walking down here, I ran into one of the kids in the street, and he said, oh, why were you shut last week? And I say, oh, it's because of this. And he went, oh, how come then? So how come? He's like, let me get his exact words right. He said, oh, but the goody-goody ones get to still come. He meant the younger kids who aren't so badly behaved. Whereas all us bad lot, we don't get to have that anymore. And you're like, yeah, that's what we did, effectively, as a decision. We made that choice. We said, you as bad kids, we can't cope with you in the building because you're destroying stuff, so we're not going to let you in. Now, I think that's a reasonable decision, but at the same time, you're like, what are we now saying? Are we saying that you, as naughty kids, as disruptive ones, can't come in and hear stuff? And if so, how are we going to actually reach you and tell you that actually God comes to those people who are naughty and rude and can't cope with youth clubs? Because we want to reach those kids. And so there's that. So kind of two things there. So one, good idea. After-school clubs, I think, are brilliant generally, if thought through. Dropping youth clubs, I think, one of those things where we do them often because it's great, looks brilliant, open a door, have a pool table, kids flood in. Actually, I'm not sure how well they do it, the whole sharing the life with a gospel purpose, to teach them about Jesus, to talk to them about Jesus. Okay, talk about that. Are those things ring true? Do you do after-school clubs? Would you like to do after-school clubs? Where would you start? Ask those questions among yourselves now. Okay, just draw that to a close. Third, potentially brilliant, maybe not idea. Impart a skill. okay? Let me explain this. So there are lots of mostly probably middle-class people. I might be stereotyping, but probably. Are probably quite skilled people in a variety of ways. You probably can operate computers. You could drive cars. You can play guitar. You're Christians. You can all play guitar. Anyway, you can do loads of things. And there are lots of people who would love to have those skills shared with them. All right, so schools are great for this, primary schools especially. If you can come in and read with people, if you can say, I will teach you this, that, and the other. If you can say, I can help run RS lessons in second school, stuff like that. You often have those skills, and you can help teach them to other people. Local community centres often want people to come in and say, I can do a five-week course in this, that, and the other. Now, that's a great way of getting to know people, but again, it's got to be intention. It's got to be saying, hi, I go to this church. I'd love to come and be involved because I live in the area. This is kind of what our remit is, to be honest and say, you know, it depends on your context, I guess, but saying, look, I'd like to do this because I'd love people to know Jesus. That can be the easiest way, just be really almost brutally blunt and say, I want to talk to people about Jesus, but I've got these skills I'd love to impart them to. Some people are really open with that stuff. Other times it's, I'll be clear, it's not ever being deceiving because that doesn't work. God's a God of truth, not a God of lie. So it's being honest to people, but it's saying, actually, like, if it's going to the the further education centre and helping out with stuff there with adults and then building up relationships so you can talk to people with intentionality, passing on skills. Some guys I know, when there's a squat nearby, did you ever hear in the papers about Guy Ritchie's house got squatted in? That was very funny. That was his house he bought on the square. It had been empty for years. He gets the builders in to do some work. They leave a window open. Squatters come in. They get thrown out a few weeks. They go to a local pub. They get thrown out from there. They go somewhere else. It's quite amusing. But their idea was to run this open university where everyone can come and learn stuff. So people came there to do seminars about stuff. So some guys I know were like, hey, we'll come and do a seminar about the Gospel of Mark. You want that? And like, brilliant, you can go after feminist porn. Feminist porn will be at 3 o'clock, and you at 5 o'clock can do the Gospel of Mark. That's literally what happened. And so you can go and teach about the Gospel of Mark and Jesus, and they're like, great, this is brilliant. So currently the Occupy London-y, whatever ones, down at St. Paul's have a little university school thing where they do lectures and stuff. And actually, as a Christian, you can go, hey, would you like to hear about the Bible? People are like, yeah, that's an hour seminar, come down, do that. You can actually impart skills which are just teaching people about Jesus, and they're up for that. There's other stuff we can do. We've tried to do some driving stuff. Lots of our kids drive illegally because they can't afford cars insurance, and they're really, some of them really poor academically. So to pass a practical test driving, fine. To pass a theory test, they haven't passed a test since they were 11. So to teach them those skills, to get people to sit with them, to talk to them about the highway code and stuff, it's a great way of getting to know them and also sharing your life with them and so Jesus. Okay, talk about that in the same manner. Share among yourselves. Okay, we'll stop there because time is running away from us, as it does. Okay, fourth idea. Go to them on the streets, okay? This is the scary idea that people don't like because it involves going to people you don't know coldly and saying, hi, can I talk to you about Jesus? Now, the Christian church has a rich tradition of this in that people like Jesus and Paul did this and they stood there and talked about, well, Jesus himself with Paul, Jesus. And, you know, street preaching classically in this country. But I don't necessarily mean that, although that's, you know, cool. What's sometimes called detached work in that you go out to people and you go, hi, my name is Mark. I work for this church. I'm involved in this church, whatever. Can I talk to you about Jesus? Do you want to tell me about yourself? You can do things like offer prayer for people, to read the Bible with people. A friend of mine's church just does this thing called prayer on the streets where they sit outside with a little table and they go, can we pray for you to people? And people will come up and some will go, can you pray on my leg? That my leg will be healed, and some go, I've got an exam, and some just want to talk, and it's a good way of saying, okay, we believe in this God who came in his son, Jesus, to save people, and through him we can pray for you, and stuff like that. It's an easy way in. Or you can just go out in the evenings, you can go to like the local park or the rec, where certainly teenagers are hanging around, kicking a football around, and introduce yourself and say who you are. Again, you have this intentionality, or otherwise you're a weirdo. That's good. If you just start coming and chatting to kids without explaining who you are or why you're there, people in this country will think you're weird. That's probably a bit of a cultural thing. So just do say, hi, I work for the church. I've come to talk to you about Jesus. Do you want to chat? How's it going? It's slightly scary. You need to think it through. Think things through, like, does our child protection policy at work, if you are doing it with the church, cover this? Don't do it on your own for obvious reasons. Do it with other people. Go and say hello, respect the other person and stuff like that. But it's actually, it's relatively fun when you get into it. It is terrifyingly scary at first, I'll give you that. But Jesus is with you. He goes before you. He's cool. You know, if he goes horribly wrong, who cares? So, yeah, go out, chat to people. Has anyone tried that? Has anyone done detached work, street preaching stuff? Yes, some hands. Brilliant. Also, in a similar note, door knocking is the same thing, but we don't do that anymore, do we really? Do people still? Some people knock doors. Yes, good work. But people do that kind of stuff. But it's kind of cold calling, which we don't like in our culture, but there's nothing wrong with that and getting talking to people and stuff like that. Okay, talk about that. We've only got about 10 minutes, so talk about that for maybe a minute, and then we'll do the last point and some other stuff. Okay, so one last idea, and this is great fun, is invite people around your house for dinner. Okay, so lots of you will know people kind of a little bit, like you'll know parents of kids at school maybe, you'll know the kids, but you won't really know the parents, people in the street, you know, kind of work colleagues. Literally, invite them around your house for dinner. Now, this is quite popular with none other than Jesus himself. He was always having dinner with people. And it's a great way of sharing hospitality and welcoming people in. And one of the good things about it is you're physically demonstrating that when you say Jesus welcomes sinners, you're doing that yourself. You're saying, yeah, the gospel's for sinners. It's for people. So come into our house. Come have dinner with us. We'll welcome you into our home. You know, come hang out with us. See how we have an argument over the washing up, whatever that is. But you can then demonstrate God's love. And it's quite a natural thing to kind of go, do you want to come around for dinner? And then you do things like you say grace, you talk about your weeks, talk about what happened on Sunday. You can bring up what you're talking about, again, with this intentionality of we're talking about Jesus. Big dinners invite people from church, people not from church, have people around. It's quite fun. There's a guy called Tim Chester, who probably some of you know, who wrote a book called A Meal with Jesus. It's very good. I think it's now also published the Good Book Company as well, so you can probably buy it. I don't know. But anyway, you can get it on Amazon too, but don't obviously spread that. Anyway. But it's a good book, and it kind of talks through some of that stuff. But yeah, it's a great evangelistic tool in a sense. And you have dinner how many times a week? Like, obviously, 7. Well, it depends if you're in a hurry. But, you know, and obviously you have breakfast and lunch too, maybe, as well. And inviting people around for breakfast, a bit more odd. But anyway, you can do that. You can have people around, you can chat to them, you can do that stuff with them. Okay, talk quickly, because we will run out of time otherwise, because I want some feedback from something else. So, Karen, talk among yourselves. Okay, a few quick points, and then you should be getting a piece of paper around right now. You might not all get one, they might get back to you, but hold on to the piece of paper for a reason in a minute. Just a few things on like further developing stages follow-up. Obviously, there are great things to do, like courses like Christianity Explored and Alpha and those other ones, and you can choose your favorites. But just literally reading the Bible with people is a brilliant thing to do. We do it with our kids in groups, sort of like 7, 8-year-olds, and we do it with some of our teenagers, one-to-one, some of them, and we do it kind of in some groups as well. But literally just reading through a section of the Bible, we generally start with Mark's Gospel because it's quick and short, and then talking about it. And sometimes you only get as far as verse 1, they kind of spiral off, and sometimes you can get through kind of 2 or 3 chapters. But I think we sometimes kind of think we have to sort of bridge the gap between the Bible. We have to sit there and translate it again. So they have a Bible, and then we'll kind of stand in front of the Bible and go, let me tell you what it really means. But actually saying to them, if they want to read the Bible, saying, okay, what does this tell you about Jesus? What does it tell you about you? What's the other world? And then talking that stuff through with them. It's not that unnatural. It kind of requires a slightly different way of thinking, because we're used to doing Bible studies where we spend sort of 2-3 hours preparing beforehand, maybe, or like 5 minutes quickly reading through a book and pretending you're prepared. So we do it like that, but it's kind of just a more, let's start reading Mark, we'll see how far we get, or John, or whatever, or Genesis, or Leviticus, anything, and say, okay, what does this teach you about Jesus? And it's amazing, actually, how effective that is. There's a guy who I massively admire called Andy Hawthorne, who does stuff with the Message Project up in Manchester. So they do stuff which is kind of church plants slash youth club slash stuff like this. And he was speaking in the House of Commons the other day, or Parliament, one of the houses we have, somewhere, anyway, with parliamentary people. Right, he was speaking there at this prayer breakfast, and they asked him to speak about faith-based youth work. And because the guy loves Jesus, he's just like, right, well, faith-based youth work, whatever, but it's Jesus-based youth work, that what counts. And he goes, what we found is this. This is in front of all his MPs sitting there. He says, we found that the Bible works and Jesus is the answer. He says, if you just teach kids the Bible and you talk to them about Jesus, that makes a difference. That transforms people from these people who might go into criminality, who will be on benefits, whatever, into people who will love Jesus. And that will have an effect on their social lives, clearly, but more importantly, they'll love Jesus. And actually, we try and often stand in front of it, and we try and interpret it and not let people have access to the Bible, and actually just giving them it and saying, hey, read it. The Good Book Company, they do publish little gospels like this. This is an ESV. If you want readable ones, they also publish the NIV. So I stopped using ESV because I had to translate it for some of my kids. So anyway, but they publish them, all the Gospels like that. You can just buy them in bulk packets. So we have like 50, I think, sitting in our work, and we can just throw them at people, literally in some cases, but also give them out and read them with people. And then if we lose them in Starbucks or whatever, then great, because people might find them and read them. Brilliant. Okay, on your piece of paper, this is where it becomes slightly more crowdsourcey, right? If you've got a piece of paper, great. If you don't, maybe just tear something off your notepad. What I'd like you to do is write down an idea you found kind of works-ish for reaching people who are currently unreached. If you haven't got one, don't worry too much. But then what everyone will do, right, in between seminars, so this seminar finishes in about 3 minutes, there's 15 minutes to change over and switch between it. You can all put in the fez of glory or doom, you can put in your idea, right? And then I'll try and compile them all in a magical list and put them on the internet somewhere. Now, that's not very helpful because the internet's a big place. So I have a website which I'll flash up at the end. You can find it. I'll get the Good Book Company to probably tweet it around and send it around on Facebook and stuff like that. Social networks, they're brilliant. Okay, and then you can hopefully see, because like I said, ideas are just ideas, right? They might be the best idea in the world or the worst idea, but it's about actually going, I trust in Jesus, who is the power to save people, who is great and glorious. I've prayed about this. We're going into this knowing that he's in command of it all. And that will take a great idea and be great, and take a rubbish idea and make it great too. You can have the worst possible idea to reach people, and yet because Jesus is a gracious and loving God and is delighted in his brothers and the father is delighted in his children, then he will work these things out, because it's not about you having brilliant ideas. It's about God being glorious and wonderful. So ideas in the hat at the end. So maybe write them down now. I'm going to recommend one more book. There's a book called Missionary Method, St. Paul's or Ours. It is the best possible book ever written when it comes to things like follow-up. Questions of things like, okay, these kids have become Christians, these young people from a terrible background, these kids with no parents, these, guys who live in a squat, and I don't know how to cope with that, because that's really weird to me, and that's a whole new world. It's written in 1910, and it's written about working with heathens in China and India, okay? Don't let that put you off, because it's incredibly relevant to reaching people who aren't currently reached, because that's what it's about. Great. It's on Amazon, not via the Good Book Company. Sorry about that. Okay, answers on questions. We should be finishing now. So we're not going to do a quick Q&A because we won't have time. It'll be annoying because you ask a question, I'll have to go. But I will be hanging around after the next seminar when there's coffee here somewhere. So come talk to me. I'd love that. Also, contact details are there. If you put that's my website in the middle one there. So you can just, I'll put it up there and I'll get it tweeted around the internet, and the Good Book Company, whatever, can send it around. And so hopefully we'll have a list of 100 ideas which might all be better than the ones you've heard. And you think, gosh, if only I had that list first, I wouldn't have to come to a seminar. But that'd be a great thing, because you know what? Well, I also don't think we've got it sorted at where we are. I think actually we do stuff really badly. And I'd love better ideas. But more than that, I'd love to trust God more. I'd love to go, yeah, actually, we'll do this holding on to you and looking to you and being satisfied in you. So maybe let me pray for us and then write an idea, Fez, and switch around and try not to get lost in the building. Dear Father, thank you, Lord, that you are a gracious and merciful God and that you sent your Son Jesus to die for us. And through that, we have forgiveness of sins, we have life everlasting. But we also have your great blessing upon us now, that you love us and delight in us and delight to see us trust in you and hold on to you. And you have promised, Lord, to do immeasurably more than we can ask or imagine. So do that, Lord. We all know people who we would love to see saved, and we maybe will soon know people who we'll love to see saved. And so, Lord, do that for your glory and for your majesty and for your good. Please, Lord, do that. Save these people so that they will turn from their wicked ways and they will come into your glorious kingdom where your Son will get the praise that he so richly deserves. Amen.